Scottish castle situated on the scenic Kyle of Sutherland, with a scandalous backstory and a resident ghost called Betty. Sound like the home for you? Well, if you're in the market for a haunted house, you've come to the right place. I'm Caitlin Blackwell Baines. Welcome to Haunted Homes. Perched on a precipice high above the Kyle of Sutherland in the Scottish Highlands, the imposing 64-room Carbisdale Castle looms over the ruggedly beautiful terrain like something out of a fairy tale. It's hard to imagine that for some 60 years, the building served as a youth hostel, accommodating bohemian backpackers and budget tourists rather than royalty. However, the most recent owners managed to secure planning permission to turn this once-faded institutional structure back into a luxurious single-family home, replete with 19 bedrooms, 5 reception rooms, an indoor swimming pool, a home cinema, and more. Originally built between 1908 and 1917 for the Dowager Duchess of Sutherland, this 3-story baronial mansion has been designated a Grade B-listed building by Historic Environment Scotland, meaning it is a building of regional historical significance. But while it missed the mark for a Grade A listing, the designation given to buildings with national or international historic significance, Carbisdale Castle is nevertheless notorious in its own right. Popularly known as Spike Castle, the home is infamous for the events that led to its creation. Prior to its construction, the castle's original owner, Mary Caroline Blair, the Dowager Duchess of Sutherland, was engaged in a pitched legal battle with her late husband's children, a battle over the inheritance left behind by Scotland's richest nobleman. Though she ultimately lost this battle, Mary just might have won the war. When she was denied the fortune, but granted the consolation prize of a stately home built at the expense of her in-laws, she created Carbisdale, a stonking great pile right at the edge of the Sutherland family estate, in full view of the only road leading to their own home. At the front, she placed a giant 4-sided clock tower, only 3 of which had clock faces. The blank side faced the Sutherland family home, Mary's snide way of saying that she didn't wish to give her in-laws the time of day. Some say the spiteful Duchess still roams the castle's corridors. Others believe the property is actually haunted by a different lady, a mysterious woman in white called Betty. Either way, this unique home comes with at least one ghostly occupant. But more on these spectral tenants in situ later. First, a bit about the local area. Located in the far northern highlands in the county of Sutherland, Carbisdale Castle is remote to say the least. It is reached via single-track road, which runs for about 5 miles from the closest settlement, Ardgay, a small village with a single shop, a cafe, and only about 500 residents. In fact, the entire geographical region of Sutherland, covering some 2,000 square miles, is home to just 13,500 people, making it one of the most sparsely populated regions in all of Europe. So, if you're looking for an escape from the hustle and bustle of city life, this is it. The wide open expanses of untouched wilderness offer peace and tranquility, yet they belie a much more chaotic past. The Highland clearances, that is the mass eviction of tenant farmers by Highland landlords in the 18th and 19th centuries, decimated a once thriving population. It led to widespread poverty, homelessness, and displacement. But it wasn't exactly a blissful utopia prior to this mass exodus either. From the early Middle Ages, the Scottish Highlands were controlled not by a central ruler or governing body, but by a number of competing clan chiefs, powerful tribal overlords that offered protection and land to the clansmen, who in return paid in goods, rent, and service, often military service. Bloody battles between warring clans were a regular feature of Highland life for centuries. When the Scottish King James VI was crowned King of England in 1601, he attempted to use his increased power and resources to impose order on the lawless anarchy of Scotland's far north. He succeeded in quelling some of the chaos by turning the clan chiefs into something more akin to gentlemen landlords. Aristocrats who were required to be educated in Protestant English schools in the south and to appear annually in front of the Privy Council in Edinburgh. But while tribal warfare waned, bigger and bloodier battles were still on the horizon. On the 27th of April, 1650, on farmland near where the Dowager Duchess's castle would one day stand, two armies clashed in a violent skirmish known as the Battle of Carbisdale. Rather than competing clans, these were political enemies fighting a much bigger war. As the English Civil War raged in the south, the people of Scotland were divided over their own loyalties. Some sided with the Cavaliers or Royalists who supported the Stuart monarchy, while others lobbied for new leadership and representation. Among those were the Covenanters, members of a powerful religious and political movement which fought for the primacy of the Scottish Presbyterian Church. The Battle of Carbisdale pitted the Royalist leader James Graham, 1st Marquess of Montrose, against the Scottish government, led by Archibald Campbell, 1st Marquess of Argyll, and a group of radical Covenanters. Despite the fact that Montrose had the backing of Charles II himself and an army of 1,500 men, Argyll's much smaller force of just 700 Highland warriors took the decisive victory. All told, Montrose lost 650 men, while Argyll lost only three. Historians speculate that this spectacular defeat was the result of misinformation fed to Montrose by a treacherous scout who had been secretly working for the other side. It seems the Royalist forces were lured into a trap and besieged on a hill just behind where Carbisdale Castle now stands. Hundreds died of their wounds, whilst others drowned in the Kyle of Sutherland trying to make their escape. The hill has since been dubbed the Hill of Lamentation by the locals. Montrose, however, actually managed to escape the hill unscathed. Disguised as a shepherd, he fled to nearby Ardvec Castle, where he expected to be offered refuge by an old friend and ally called Neil MacLeod. Instead, he was greeted by MacLeod's wife, who just happened to be the daughter of a Covenanter. She imprisoned him in the castle cellar before turning him over to his enemies in exchange for a £25,000 reward. On the 21st of May 1650, Montrose was executed for treason. After being hanged, drawn, and quartered, his severed head was displayed on a pike outside Edinburgh's St. Giles Cathedral. More than three centuries later, the restless souls of the defeated royalists allegedly still roam the battlefield and beyond. At Carbisdale Castle, a sword-wielding apparition in 17th-century military garb has been seen stalking the Link Corridor. Meanwhile, at Ardvec Castle, now nothing more than a crumbling tower, the ghost of Montrose himself is said to keep a solemn vigil. Built on land, saturated in the blood of fallen soldiers, Carbisdale Castle's history is certainly steeped in conflict, but not just of the military variety. Domestic drama and public scandal may as well have been its bricks and mortar. At the center of this scandal is the notorious Mary Caroline Blair. The flamboyant future Duchess came from relatively modest beginnings, born in Oxford in 1848 to Reverend Richard Mitchell, principal of Hertford College, Oxford, and Amelia Blair, the daughter of a serviceman in the East India Company. Though she was of decidedly middle-class origins, Mary was able to parlay her charm, intellect, and connections to work her way up Oxford's elite social scene. In 1872, she married her cousin, Arthur Kindersley Blair, a retired military captain who worked as a land agent and business manager for George Sutherland Levison Gower, the 3rd Duke of Sutherland. By all accounts, their marriage was an unhappy one. Arthur was said to have been a rather melancholy man, and perhaps he had every right to be. His bride, it seems, had wandering eyes, and eventually those eyes became squarely fixed upon her husband's wealthy employer, the Duke of Sutherland. When, in 1883, Arthur Blair was found dead from a shotgun wound, it was officially recorded as a hunting accident. However, rumors soon began to swirl that this was a cover-up for suicide, or maybe even murder. By now, it was publicly known that Mary was the Duke's mistress. But despite Arthur's death, the lovers still had a pretty major obstacle standing in their way. The Duke's own wife, Duchess Anne, from whom he was becoming increasingly estranged. Notably, in 1887, when the Duke fell gravely ill, he elected to have Mary at his bedside rather than his wife and children. It is said that his eldest son, Cromarty, never forgave his father for this callous slight. Once recovered from his illness, the Duke and his mistress spent the following year traveling the world aboard his yacht, the Sans Peur, or the Fearless. They visited India, Singapore, and Bangkok, and were the guests of the King of Siam. Appearing publicly as the Duke's companion on such visits, Mary was introduced as Lady Clare, a curious pseudonym bearing no connection to her actual identity, but which presumably was used to disguise both her lower-class origins and dubious marital status. In November of 1888, whilst the Duke and Lady Clare were still abroad staying at his American estate in Florida, his wife passed away. How convenient. Now, the only thing keeping the two lovers from making their union official was public scrutiny. Victorian etiquette dictated that, for a certain period of time, bereaved spouses were to make an outward display of mourning for their dead partners. Women were expected to dress in black and refrain from remarriage for at least 2 years. Men, on the other hand, were given considerably more leeway. They would still be expected to dress in black, but they could remarry at their own discretion. Well, at least most men could. As a nobleman and a cousin of the Queen, no less, the Duke of Sutherland was held to a slightly higher standard. Fearing further scandal, Queen Victoria, who'd been a close personal friend of the late Duchess's, firmly instructed her kinsmen not to remarry for at least another year. Flouting both convention and royal instruction, the Duke and Mary were wed just 4 months later at the Church of the Good Shepherd, a tiny, rustic chapel in Dunedin, Florida. Perhaps unsurprisingly, when the newlyweds returned to Britain, they were shunned by most of high society. No more accepting of the union, the Duke's own family disparagingly referred to Mary as Duchess Blair in reference to her cuckolded late husband. And behind her back, she was simply the she-devil. Apparently indifferent to the near universal disapproval of his new wife, the Duke redrafted his will to accommodate her. More than that, he effectively disinherited his own children, making Mary the principal heir to his considerable fortune. In September 1892, the Duke died at the Sutherland family's seat, Dunrobin Castle, a 189-room, Renaissance-style chateau reputed to be the largest stately home in the Highlands. As this property was entailed to the rightful heir of the dukedom, Sutherland's eldest son, Cromarty, this asset was out of the Dowager Duchess's reach. Everything else, however, was supposedly hers, according to the will drawn up just 1 month before the third Duke's death. Suspicious of this last-minute change, the Sutherland family took Mary to court. In the spring of 1893, litigation proceedings began. As part of this process, a bundle of papers were to be opened in front of solicitors. However, before the court had a chance to review them, the Dowager Duchess reportedly snatched up some of the pages and threw them into a roaring fire. Though she claimed they were merely personal letters from the Duke, the judge declared her in contempt of court, ordering her to pay a £250 fine and spend 6 weeks in London's Holloway Jail. News of the delinquent Duchess's charge sent shockwaves through the nation, though in truth her time in incarceration was probably far from grueling. Allegedly, she was provided a luxuriously furnished cell befitting of her noble status, and was even given permission to receive regular visits from friends. Upon her release, Mary and the Sutherland family came to a begrudging agreement. Though she would not be awarded the Duke's entire fortune, she would be provided with a hefty financial settlement. In return for giving up her claims, Mary would receive £500,000, today's equivalent of about $40 million, plus a suitable accommodation built at her in-laws' expense. For this, she was given relative free rein to create the home of her dreams, however costly and extravagant, but there was one caveat. It could not be built on Sutherland family land. And indeed it wasn't. Rather, it was built just outside the estate's boundaries, located on a hill in plain and perpetual view of her hated in-laws. If Mary intended to live out the rest of her days ensconced in the sumptuous seat, glowering down at her sworn enemies, she would never get the opportunity. Mary Caroline Blair, Dowager Duchess of Sutherland, died in London on the 27th of May, 1912, 5 years before the completion of her vengeful magnum opus. According to her wishes, she was buried in Staffordshire alongside her second husband, the Duke. Carbisdale Castle then sat empty for the next two decades before it was finally purchased in 1933. The buyer was one Colonel Theodore Salveson, a Scottish shipping magnate of Norwegian extraction. For the wealthy colonel, the castle was just one of many lavish homes, and so he was able to lend it out to the King of Norway as a safe haven during the Second World War. It was here, in June of 1941, that King Haakon VII would hold the so-called Carbisdale Conference, a treaty that stated that if Russian forces were ever to enter Norwegian territory, they would agree to vacate after the war. Following Colonel Salveson's death in 1942, Carbisdale passed to his son, Captain Harold Salveson, who in turn donated the castle and all its contents to the Scottish Youth Hostel Association. Carbisdale Youth Hostel opened its doors on the 2nd of June 1945 and remained in operation for the next six decades until frost damage caused by a particularly bitter Highland winter led to its permanent closure in February 2011. It's not exactly clear when the castle cum hostel first developed a reputation for being haunted. Indeed, the ghostly legends associated with it are as hazy and elusive as the spirits themselves. There's reports of a phantom bagpiper, a mainstay of the haunted castle tradition, as well as a hooded figure in black that stalks young girls, reputed to be a former gardener who tragically lost his own daughter. Then there's the restless royalist soldier, and of course, the most famous ghostly resident, the White Lady, another staple of the haunted castle canon. But who is this woman in white? Who was the first to see her? And who is it that decided her name was Betty, rather than, say, Mary? Moreover, why did one of the hostel's dorm rooms become known to staff and guests as the spook room? We may never know, as there are so few first-hand accounts of the hauntings. But there is one report that comes from a rather unexpected source. Grace Knight, the British-born Australian jazz singer and former frontwoman of the 80s pop band The Eurogliders, spent a formative part of her youth at Carbisdale and wrote of some of her unearthly experiences in her 2010 autobiography. She describes how, prior to relocating to Perth as an adult, she spent much of her childhood in the 1960s in the care of her vagabond alcoholic father, whose various odd jobs included, at one point, working as the manager of the Carbisdale Youth Hostel. "There were occasions when we had ghostly activity at the castle," Grace recalls. "It was nothing too freaky, bells ringing even though their mechanisms were rusted up. Sometimes I'd hear someone walking beside me on the upper gallery or hear the swish of a dress and the sound of leather-heeled shoes clomping a bit behind me. Sometimes you could hear noises coming from the nursery. It would sound like talking or a child crying, but you can never decipher the words. I thought it was the wind blowing under the doors and being sucked around the building," she explains. Grace apparently didn't put too much weight into the Carbisdale ghosts. Her father, on the other hand, saw the opportunity to cash in on them. "Dad devised a plan that he thought would bring more guests to the castle and put Carbisdale on the tourist map," Grace reveals. "We encouraged the notion that the castle was haunted and readily agreed with guests when their excited imaginations would fly away with them." She admits that when visitors claimed to have seen a ghost, she would slyly goad them on. "What she looked like, I would guess it was female, and they would describe her in detail, and I'd nod and agree with each description." So it seems that Grace and her father had at least something to do with the perpetuation of Carbisdale's White Lady myth. And yet, it wasn't just gullible tourists who bought into the legend. Locals recall that one former staff member claimed to have seen the White Lady on several occasions. George Murray, employed in the gardens of Carbisdale, was alleged to have spotted her one summer's day, standing alongside a gorse bush clad in a diaphanous white gown draped from her shoulders. He advanced to her location, but in an instant she was gone, vanishing without a trace. Murray reportedly saw her two or three more times that summer, but like before, she always disappeared before he could accost her. As such, he never got the opportunity to ask her name. So, is this mysterious woman in white none other than the notorious Duchess Blair? Does she linger here to lay claim to the hard-won home she never lived to see to completion? Perhaps the property's next owner will have better luck pinning her down. Looking for an escape to the remote Scottish countryside? Always dreamed of owning your own castle? Well, for a cool £1.2 million, Carbisdale Castle could be yours. Though you may have to share it with a dead duchess. Try to be nicer to the neighbours than she was.